This is Brian Kane with the Mental Performance Mastery Podcast, our long-form podcast, coach and athlete interviews, bringing you the absolute best in mental performance mastery. Today, our guest is a 2004 NCAA national champion, a 2019 World Series champion. He played over 15 years in Major League Baseball, was an all-star. We're talking about Kurt Suzuki. Kurt and I go back all the way to the fall of 2001 when we both started at Cal State Fullerton and is a part of the Titans baseball program. Kurt, a walk-on catcher from Maui, Hawaii, and me, the graduate school student assistant, getting a master's in mental performance with Ken Revizza. As a grad assistant that year and the following season with Titan Baseball, Kurt and I developed a great relationship and friendship that is extended to today, and I can't be more excited about bringing him to Mental Performance Mastery to talk about his experience learning the mental game, using adversity as his advantage, creating that so what next pitch mentality, learning how to live in the moment, not the past or the future, and everything that he knows about what it takes to play 162, what it takes to ride that baseball roller coaster, staying neutral, handling the success, handling the adversity, and how the fear of failure will cost you your career or bring you to another level. It's all in how you process it. And here, Kurt Suzuki teaches you how. Let's join Kurt Suzuki in the Mental Performance Mastery Podcast. Fired up to have you on the podcast. Thanks for being here, brother. It's been a long time coming.
Oh, Kaner, it's been a long time, dude. I'm so excited to be here. Obviously, what you've done, you know, from way back, we were in Fullerton, hanging out together at the fields at Goodwin Field, you know, hanging out outside the ballpark, you know, getting to know each other, having fun, and now, you know, you're doing your thing, working with all these elite athletes. I couldn't be happier for you, and I'm really excited to be here today.
Man, well, I'm glad you're here, Kurt, because it's not every day that we get to have somebody who's been essentially on the same journey as I have. I mean, I went to Cal State Fullerton the fall of 2001, right? First season was 2022, I think your freshman year, 2003, we go to the College World Series, beats LSU, beats Stanford, lose to Stanford, who then loses to Rice. And then in 2004, you guys go win the national championship and you have one of the best seasons in college baseball. So like we both kind of got started in the mental game at Cal State Fullerton in the same fall. You know, obviously you went the path of taking what you learned to go have a storied major league career. And I took what I learned to try to go help guys have a storied major league career. So if I were to ask you, Zook, what is the mental game to you?
Well, for me, the mental game in the game of baseball is the most important thing. Obviously, as we all know, baseball is built on failure, right? Failure, how you look at failure, it is probably what separates, you know, the good players to the great players. It's do you take failure as not being successful, or do you take failure as I'm learning something new to get myself better? And I think with the game of baseball, you are always getting better. It's a very humbling game. You know how humbling it is. You could be 4-for-4 3 days in a row, and then you go on an 0-for-20 skid. I mean, that's just how the game works. You know, you never figure it out. And I always tell the kids when I'm talking to them, whether it's my son, whether it's these high school kids or college or major league kids that I'm talking to now, it's once you think you figured the game out, that's when you get humbled, and that's where I feel like, you know, you get into trouble is you're like, oh, I'm 4-for-4. You know, I figured it out. I got this. And then next thing you know, 2 weeks later, you're in an 0-for-30 slump and you're searching, you're grinding and all these things. So I think the mental game in baseball is the most important part that elevates you from being a minor league 4A player to a major league baseball player with a long career.
Yeah. You know, and you made your major league debut in 2007 and had your last appearance in 2022. So almost a 15-year, if my math is right, 15-year career, you know, and talk about kind of like your introduction to the mental game though. You're at Cal State Fullerton, you come over from Maui and, you know, you've got on that staff, Chad Baum and Rick Vanderhook and Dave Serrano and George Horton, you know, all very successful college coaches, and Ken Revizza was a part of that staff in a way, right? And I think had you in a class, a mental skills class, your freshman year, like what were some of the things that really maybe stuck out to you? If you can rewind the clock back to your days at Fullerton coming out of high school, right? And going, man, this is new. This is the mental game. Like what were some of the things you remember from kind of early on in your career there at Fullerton?
Yeah. Obviously coming from Maui, you know, essentially being unrecruited, you know, throughout my high school. You know, I didn't get drafted. I didn't get any scholarship offers, you know, anywhere. Coming to Fullerton was more of, I guess, a shot in the dark, just hoping and praying that things work out. I know I remember having a conversation with Coach Serrano, and he even himself had mentioned to me, like, you know, I don't want this to be a dead end. You know, we're going to give you an opportunity. And I just told Coach, I said, hey, I just want an opportunity to play. I said, if I get a fair shot like everybody else, I'm in. And he said, you will 100% get a fair shot. So I don't know if how mentally strong I was by making that leap, but I feel like when I got to Fullerton and working with, you know, Ken Revisa, working with Vanderhoek, Hortons, Bombs, Serranos, working with that staff, I think took me to another level that I guess you could say prepared me for what was going to happen in professional baseball. Getting there in 2001 in the fall, being a, you know, unrecruited walk-on, just kind of, you know, hoping to fit in and just being on a team, you know, to ended up being, you know, drafted in the second round, All-American and things like that. I think what separated myself was having a guy to learn from, like a Ken Revisa, you know, him guiding me to, I guess, to accept failure as a positive thing where, you know, in high school, everybody's good, right? Everybody's the best. And you, when you hit that Division I level, you become, I guess, just a normal person where you're playing at the top Division I level. Everybody's good. Everybody was, you know, recruited. Everybody had a full scholarship. And now you're on that playing field, and what's going to separate you? And I think having Kenny in the corner of, I guess, taking the monkey off your back, you know, so what, next pitch, you know, just kind of things like that, picking up a teammate, you know, living in the moment, not living in the past or the future. I think that type of stuff, I think, helped propel me to what I was able to accomplish at Fullerton and then eventually at the professional level.
Yeah, and just so people caught that, right? Like, Kurt was a walk-on, not recruited, essentially, not scholarship, to go to Cal State Fullerton for the 2002 season, his freshman year. And after the end, at the end of 2003, the World Series trip, 2004, they win the World Series, and he's the Brooks Wallace recipient of the best catcher in college baseball. He's an All-American, right? He's a finalist for the Golden Spikes Award, and he gets the game-winning hit, a two-out RBI single in the bottom of the seventh to give the Titans the 3-2 lead that you ended up holding on to beat Texas in the national championship. You know, so you went from a guy that was really not recruited to a second round pick, an all-star in 2014, a World Series champion in 2019. If you go back to, Kurt, that time at Fullerton, you just rattled off a list I want to go back to. You said, take the monkey off your back. So what, next pitch? Live in the moment. Focus on the process. One pitch at a time. Recognizing your signal lights. What were some of those key things that you felt like, maybe it's the routine, getting in the box, or using visualization? Anything that you took with you from your days at Fullerton that you then used for your 15-year major league career?
Probably the biggest thing was living in the moment. And, well, I guess I can say not one biggest thing, but the things that I really used throughout, you know, my career was living in the moment and having a focal point and staying with the process. Those were kind of the main things I was where, you know, I get talked to from guys who work with you, guys who worked with Kenny back in the day. They're like, man, you still look at your bat and take a deep breath, you know, when you get into a tough spot. And I remember talking with Ken when I was in college, and we're getting going, and, you know, things were kind of hitting a rough patch, and he was kind of mentioning to us, get your focal point, take a deep breath, whether it's the label on your bat. I remember in college, I had two stripes of tape on my bat right under my barrel, and that was my focal point that I looked at. And when I got to pro ball, my focal point was the label of my bat. That was my focal point. And I take a deep breath, clear my mind, step in the box. Nothing matters but that one pitch. And I think, you know, knowing that now, trying to instill that in the kids that I work with, my boys that I work with, is huge, because I feel like having that focal point lets you release, right? It lets you release all the things that's going on in your mind, whether it's what pitch is he going to throw me next? You know, oh my gosh, the guy's on second base. He's a tying run. It's the seventh inning. I got 40,000 people yelling at me, hoping that I succeed. I got all these people watching me on TV. You got all these things going through your mind, and how can you live in the moment? And for me, it was taking a deep breath, having that focal point that I pick up before I step into the box. I own the box was another thing that, you know, Ken was big on, is you step in that box, you own that box. It's your box, and this is your place. And I think that type of stuff that I still use today is phenomenal.
You know, I want to kind of show the viewers here what we're talking about. So if you're listening to this podcast, we'll put a link to the show notes below. We're going to pull up some hitting routine footage of Kurt Suzuki from 2003 and 2004. But first, here's a picture of me speaking at an event in Hawaii, Kurt. You can see the lay around the neck back in the day, showing your hitting routine. So bringing you back to the island there. But if we take a look at this video that I've used a lot, you know, since then, is a split screen. And if you watch you on the left here in 2003, you're going to see yourself look at the tape on your bat and get in the box. But then when you watch yourself in 2004, is this the first time you've seen this video?
I haven't seen this thing.
Oh, this is amazing. So when you look at yourself in 2004, right, look at the breath in 2004 versus the breath in 2003. And, you know, I want you to kind of walk us through, like, look at the difference here. Now that you're coaching and you're the guy in the video in both 04, full deep breath, 03, whoop, I rushed right through it. When you see those two videos, Zook, what do you see as a difference in the mindset and the routine, maybe that in the moment of both of these guys between 03 and 04?
Well, I think for me, the biggest thing obviously was I'm a year older, right, in 04. Yeah. So I had an extra year of understanding what the process meant, what it took to do that. Another thing that nobody knew is at that time in 2004, I was in a 1-for-20 slump going into the College World Series in the biggest stage in college baseball. So I could say maybe it was exaggerated a little bit more because I really had to work extra hard in the process and clear my head and picking up that focal point and kind of relaxing myself. Where in 2003, first time in the College World Series, mine was racing, first game, I was amped, ready to go. I was like, take a deep breath, let's go. You know, just kind of go. Where in 2004, I guess it was game two of the championship series, 1-for-20 slump, probably the biggest at bat of my college career right there, against Texas. And, really had to focus on the task at hand, where it was clear it all out. Forget about the 30,000 people watching you. Forget about the weight of the 1-for-20 on your shoulders, kind of giving you that extra pressure, clearing it out and just trying to have fun. I remember it wasn't on TV, Kaner, but before I went up to that bat, Coach Horton brought me up and said, hey, Zook, your honey hole's wide open for you. And I remember smiling, and one of my best friends, PJ Pilateri, who's now the assistant hitting coach for the Colorado Rockies, I heard him screaming, he's back, boys, look out, he's back. And I ended up getting that base hit right there. So it was kind of like a thing where it was, like we said, it was, you know, Coach Horton learning from him, you know, my best friends on the team that were all pulling for me. And you're in that moment wanting to succeed. And nothing was better than to be able to come through at that time for your teammates.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I have the video, I'm trying to dig it out here, of Kyle Peterson interviewing you on the field after the game. And he's going, Kurt, you come to home plate in that situation. You're 1-for-your-last 20. You've not had a great World Series. And I don't know if you remember what you say, but you say, you know, I'm 1-for-20, but I've had some good at-bats. I've been hitting the ball hard right at people. I just stuck to my routine. I just stuck to the process, and I was trying to win pitches, is essentially what you were saying, you know? So how important is that focus for you as a player to, like, say, I'm going to try to win the pitch versus try to win the game or win the at-bat? I see too many players look at too big of it, of like, I'm trying to win the at-bat or win the inning, instead of, no, just win this pitch that's right here, right now. How important is that for you?
Well, I think, like you say, in the game of baseball, simplifying things, I believe, is very important. When you start thinking of, oh, I'm going to go 3-for-4 today, I'm going to drive in 8 runs today, you're thinking about the outcome, you're thinking about the results, you're becoming result oriented instead of worrying about step in the box, I'm going to win this pitch, ball one, strike one, whatever it is. Okay, I got to move on to the next pitch. This is the, at that time, that pitch is the only thing that matters in your at bat, in your mind. That's the only pitch that matters. And if you can take it and you can simplify it to being in the moment, that pitch, not worrying about results, as Coach Horton used to always tell me, forget about the results, worry about the pitch, worry about the process, and really just think how good it's going to feel, right? Mm. Think how good it's going to feel when you win this pitch. And if the umpire, let's say the umpire calls a bad pitch on you, a strike, right? He flips the count. It's not, oh, my at bat's over. You know, this, I'm in two strikes now. It's done. It's so what? Move on to the next pitch. And that's kind of, we talked about, I know we talked, you mentioned a little bit about green light, yellow light, red light, right?
Yeah, unpack that for us. What's that mean?
Yellow light, right? You kind of, your green light, right? You're flowing. You're, dude, nobody can get you out. You're facing CC Sabathia. You're facing Mariano Rivera. Nobody, you're in this zone. Nobody can get you out. Hmm. When you start hitting, oh, maybe, you know, I roll over a couple times. You get a little bit of doubt creeping in, right? You want to try to nip it in the butt real quick. You want to stop it. How do you do that, right? You try to simplify things. You step back. You try to worry about the pitch. You try to forget about the results. Stay with the process. When you hit that red light, I mean, you're in basically in a spot where you're searching, you're grinding. Nothing's going right for you. You're feeling sorry for yourself, right? You never want to get to that point. Am I saying that it's never going to happen? You're probably wrong when you're playing baseball. There's always going to be that time where you do that. But I was told when I was younger, a good example was a guy, one of my bench coaches, his name is Don Wakamatsu, who managed for the Mariners. He told me, he was the third base coach for the Texas Rangers. He goes, you see a lot of guys in the major leagues, they're kind of here, they go up and down like this, right? He goes, you want to be a guy that goes like this. And he gave me an example of Michael Young, right? Probably one of the best hitters to play the game in my mind, in my opinion, right? Batting titles, 200 hits a year. Played for whatever 15 years, all-star. And you watch Michael Young, right? You watch these guys. You watch him. How is he so good? You never see him go here and here. He's like this the whole time, whether it's emotion, whether it's a swing effort. He's never going in peaks and valleys. And I feel like to be good in the game, and like I said, it's probably not going to happen, because it's an imperfect game. But if you can hit that yellow light and be able to throttle back, understand where you're at, clear your mind, pick up your focal point, whatever process that you have to get back to that green and not get to that red, I think the quicker that you can snap out of it, that's when you become successful in this game.
Mm. Love that. You know, so much to unpack there, Zouk. And one of the things that you talked about was really like staying neutral, right? Like with Wakamatsu, we talked about staying in control of yourself. And one of the key principles that, you know, Ken Revizza used to teach in Heads Up Baseball, and I still got my copy I got in 2000, July 4th, right? Pages are falling out. Everything's underlined, right? You've seen this book. It's like the Bible of the mental game. Yes. And one of the things he says in there is you got to be in control of yourself before you can control your performance. And as a guy that, like, if someone were to ask me, man, how do you describe Kurt Suzuki? I would say, high energy, loves the game, great teammate, right? So as a guy who is high energy, right, how did you take that energy and like channel it into being neutral and in control of yourself instead of maybe getting overexcited and kind of out of control because you wanted it so bad?
That's a good question. You know, like I'm a guy where I do wear my emotions on my sleeve sometimes. You know, sometimes you'll see me be really excited, disappointed. But I think as I got older, as I matured a little bit more, I understood what it takes to play a 162 game season, you know, knowing that you can't be here the whole time. You have to be able to be even keeled. You have to, I guess, channel your energy the right way, which was something that I was taught when I got to minor league baseball, where in college baseball, you're playing 60 games. You only play on the weekends most of the time. You're go, go, go for the weekend, then you're done. You practice, right? Where in baseball, it's every single day when you get the pro ball. And I feel like when I learned how to channel my energy into the right way, where if I got out, you know, if I had an 0-for-4, I wasn't like down in the dumps. You know, I was like, hey, I'll get them tomorrow. You know, where if in college I went 0-for-4, it was like, hooky, what's going on? Let's go to the cage.
Yeah,
you know, let's figure this out. I need to figure this out. I'm 0-for-4. You know, where in pro ball, it's like 0-for-4, chalk it up. you know, it is what it is. I guess one of my hitting coaches in the Nationals, Kevin Long, longtime hitting coach, probably one of my favorite guys in the game of baseball. He once told me that when he worked with Daniel Murphy, there was a couple games where, you know, he would go 0-for-3, which at the time, Daniel Murphy was going for batting titles, at, you know, all the time with the Mets, you know, unbelievable hitter, bat the ball skills like no other. And I know, I remember one time K Long came up to me and goes, "Hey, Zook, you know, when I work at Murph," he came up to me and said, "I get 500 at bats a year." He goes, "I'm able to give away 4. He's like, "That's okay with me, right?" Understanding that it's going to happen. You're not going to be locked in the whole time. And you have to be okay with those days where, you know, you're like, "Man, I just gave away 4 at bats." But instead of dwelling on that, thinking about, "Okay, I got tomorrow. Tomorrow's a new day. Clear my mind and keep going." But for me, it's just learning to do that, because I'm so high energy. I want to be perfect. And Ron Washington had a good point he made to the boys in spring training this when I was out there with the Angels. He said, "We strive for perfection and we accept greatness," because nobody's perfect. You can strive for perfection knowing that perfection isn't attainable, but we can accept greatness when we're not perfect. And I thought that was a really cool statement that I learned right there.
Strive for perfection and accept greatness.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that you just were talking about there was like the importance of, at the end of the day, "I was 0-for-4, I'll get him tomorrow," right?
Yes.
That is so hard for guys to do. So talk about, Zook, your post-game routine, whether maybe that changed, right? Did that change before kids? And then when you had kids, it was different, right? Because there's something else that you're thinking of. And, you know, like that post-game routine for you, what did it look like for you to be able to turn off the player, turn on the regular person and the dad, and then the next day, that pregame routine to like put yourself back into competitive mode and turn yourself into the baseball player? Did you have a process, whether it was a shower, changing the clothes, a journal, like anything that you did to help you kind of flip the switch on pregame and then flip it off postgame so you could separate?
Yeah. So postgame, right? After the game, always stressed. I always had a postgame stretch, and that was my time to decompress. I had a trainer that stretched me every single time. It was a routine we had. He would talk to me about the game. I just talk about it, talk about situations that happened in the game, or, "Man, I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd done that." And I got everything out, right? So that stretch was kind of like my release. Like, I let all that out. I go, "I'm not this," and I did my best to, once that happened, that was it. You know, I move on. I'm joking around. I'm doing this. You know, you get your 10, 15 minutes of upset, you know, whatever it is, disappointment, and then you move on, right? And I think also, once you have kids, I mean, I've been with my wife Renee we've been married for 17 years. We met in college. You know, she was a volleyball player at Fullerton, so she understood, you know, the stress, the routine, all that stuff. And coming home after a game where you got walked off, and or you made an error to lose the game, or you struck out to end the game, or grounded into a double, whatever it was to fail. She understood that. And I feel like that was an important part for myself, to have a wife that understood me, that knew what I was going through, that knew the right things to say, that supported me. And then when we had kids, it was, once I leave the ballpark, I turn into dad mode, right? When I'm at the field, I'm Kurt Suzuki, the catcher, game planning, all this stuff. I'm locked in, getting ready to go. I'm straight baseball mode. When I'm away from the field, I'm a dad mode. And I feel like once I had kids, it's never easy, but it was easier to let go, because you understand, not to say that baseball is not important, but you understand the important things in life, right? Your family, your faith, and then baseball comes into play, right? And be able to go home to a kid that at that time, well, now I think if my kids are like, "You're 0-for-4, dad, what happened? You suck," you know, things like that, where back when they were 3 years old, 2, 3, 4 years old, you come home, they're laughing, they think you're Superman, they think you're the best player in the whole world. And I think that kind of puts things into perspective where, you know, I always say baseball, you have a small window, right? Baseball is going to be here and it's going to be gone in a blink of an eye. But your family and your friends is going to be there forever. And so I feel like when you separate that stuff and you kind of accept what happens at the baseball field stays there, and when you come home, you have the different side of your life that's that's important. And I think that kind of makes things a little bit easier.
You know, Matt Carpenter was on here and he talked about the same thing. He said, you know, what I know now, I wish I knew earlier in my career, was how important it is to turn it off at the end of the day, because when you turn it off at the end of the day, you have more to give when you turn it on the next day. He goes, I really wasn't able to turn it off until I had kids, because I always thought that, you know, as a late round draft pick and a guy that signed for $1,000, he's like, I had to grind, I had to push, I had to work. I thought that's what got me there. He goes, but I realized later in my career, if I was able to turn that off, I might've had a better opportunity at having success, you know, and more success than he's had. And one of the things too, Kirk, I want to circle back to was last time, I think that you and I actually got together in person. I don't know if you remember when this was. I remember.
Is that the alumni game?
Oh, well, okay. I take it back. You're right. It was alumni game. But before that, last time you were playing, go back to like 2000.
I remember this.
2013.
Together, you put a hype video up for me, right? I was with Washington.
Yes. You're splitting time back then, right? Like with, yes. Well, I don't know if it was with Ramos.
Wilson Ramos.
Yes. And you're back there. And then it was in 2013. And I remember you kind of being in a dark place. Like I got kids now and I've played the game for a long time. Like, what's going to happen here? And then you get traded back to Oakland in 13, right? The end of that season. And then you sign with Minnesota and then you're a damn all-star. So like what happened for you at that time in 2013 in Washington? And then a year later, you're an all-star. Like, take us through that kind of roller coaster though, of what it's like to be a major leaguer and just how thin that margin for error is.
Yeah. I mean, I went from my first 6 years or 5 years in Oakland, you know, I was the starting catcher. I was catching 138 games a year, you know, doing everything right. I signed the extension to stay in Oakland, you know, a 5-year extension with Oakland, set up, you know, our family for, you know, for our lifetime. Everything was going right. Right. And then I get traded in 2012 to the Nationals. They're in first place. They're going to win the division. Everything's great. We win the division. You know, we go to the playoffs for my first time ever. Everything's great. Then in 2013, you come back, you know, you get off to a okay start, you know, splitting time with Wilson Ramos, who was a tremendous player, who can really hit. I think at that time, I wasn't ready to be a part-time player. You know, in my mind, I was the starter. I was playing 120 games. I could do whatever it takes, but it just didn't happen for whatever reason, right? It didn't happen. It didn't work out. I remember calling you and I'm like, man, Kaner, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I feel like I should start. I haven't played in 2 weeks. I don't know what's going on. I'm hitting, you know, 200 with, you know, 3 homers. What's going on? And we, you know, we talked, we did our thing. And then I signed a free agent deal to go to Minnesota. And that year, it's just like everything happened. Everything clicked. Everything kind of picked up where I felt like I should have been. You know, I was in a good place. I was in a good city. I had a good teammates. You know, everything was good. You know, I had a healthy daughter. My wife was with me. Everything was good, right? And I feel like, in this game of baseball, like you talked about, things can change overnight. I feel overnight, like where you go from being, I remember, you know, being with Renee in Washington. I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to play baseball again. Like, this might be it. Like, 6 years and done, you know, it might be it. Like, am I okay with this being the last year I play? Like, I didn't know what was going to happen going into free agency and whatnot. And then obviously landing with Minnesota pretty late in the off season. Just kind of, I don't know if it rejuvenated my career, but it just kind of propelled me into a good spot and learning new things, being able to work with new coaches, you know, Gardy, you know, Terry Steinbach was my bench coach. Paul Molitor was my first base coach, Hall of Famer. Playing with Joe Mauer, learning what he does on a day-to-day basis. I think in this game, being able to create these friendships and bonds and what you learn from each player who's great, who's the best player from where they came from, to be able to learn from these guys, whether they have 2 years, 6 years, or 10 years, it's a tremendous thing to do.
So you went from Washington, Renee, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, to another 10 years in the big leagues. Right. And I want, is that right? Right. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I don't know if I'm a part-time guy, to another decade in the big leagues, including an all-star game, including a World Series title. Right. I just want to let that sink in for people for a second, because a lot of times I think they look at this and go, oh, Kurt had a 15-year plus major league career. Like, everything had to be smooth sailing and easy. It ain't smooth sailing and easy. And for a lot of the pro players listening to this, like, you may be in that same place that Zouk was in 2013, going, eh, do I want to do this anymore? And you might go get a decade.
Like 100%. And Kaner, you know, it didn't stop there. I went to Minnesota for that All-Star. Next year, we almost make the playoffs. In 2016, I went and I was like, man, this might be it. Like, you know, I remember my wife telling me going into that offseason before 2017, before I signed with Atlanta, after Minnesota, I was at 9 years and I don't know how many days. And I'm like, I'm okay with that, I guess. I can be okay. Everybody strives for that 10 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I'm okay with this. And I remember Renee telling me in the offseason, like, you cannot stop. You have to get that 10 years. You have to. And I remember it was January. We're driving back from Big Bear. I get a phone call from my agent saying, hey, the Braves called. And I'm like, okay, like Atlanta, like that's far. I don't know if I want to do this. Am I just like, what are you talking about? I don't know if I want to do this. And I was like, man, that's far with leaving my family. I don't know if I do it. Like, and Renee's like, you're doing it. And I was awesome. Like, all right, I'm doing it. And I ended up going in 2017. And honestly, from 2017, and I played, what, 5 more years from then, won a World Series. I was playing year by year. I was like, this might be it. This is it, boys. Like, yeah. I got 10 years. Like, this might be it. And then I played 5 more years, win a World Series, get to play in Anaheim in front of my friends and family. But yeah, man, it never ends. You never know. I guess you can say you never know when it's time. Like, it's crazy in this game. Like you said, it can get taken away from you in a heartbeat. You think you're done. Next thing you know, you play 10 more years in the big league. Like, it's insane. This game is crazy, but I think that's what draws people to it, is because how crazy you have to be to be in this game.
Well, go back to, like, you didn't lose hope. You looked at it objectively, and you also understood the value of the process and the steps that it takes, because you go back to your time at Fullerton where it was process, win pitches, stack good days on top of days, development, right? How much of the impact that you had from those days with Ken Revizza and your training at Fullerton that just became embedded in your DNA was helpful going through that skid in 2013 and all the way through the rest of your career?
You know, I think that was a very good foundation that I had created at Fullerton, right? You need a foundation, I guess, because you're constantly getting information. Like, every year you play, you're constantly getting information. And I think having a strong foundation that I had at Fullerton, I think helped me with this process of, you know, is this it? Is this not it? Like, I don't know if this is it. Like, having that doubt creep in your mind, that yellow light, that little bit of doubt creep in your mind, and you telling yourself, no, this is not it. And having a support cast, right? Like, my wife's like, no, this is, you're not done. Yeah. You're still in there. You still can do it. You have to just having to prove yourself every single year. But that yellow light, you hit the yellow light, you're like, nope, stop. Like, go back. What's going to get you to green? You know, forget about all the stuff that happened in the past. Is live in the present. What opportunity do we have in front of us? Like, what is this opportunity? Like, your kids, right? Like, what do you want to provide for your kids? Do you want your kids to watch you play? Do you want your kids to have experiences and travel the country and, you know, go to different states and experience different things? And I remember, you know, Renee was saying, like, we were in D.C. for 2 years, and I think they saw everything in D.C. And, like, what a gift to give your kids, being in D.C., going to the museums, going to the monuments, going to the memorials, going to all these things that they got to, going to the White House, all these things they got to experience. Like, that's what this game provides. And I feel like, once you can take the emotion of the results of the, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. Once you can take all of that and put it to the side and say, let's go and jump in and say, let's stay with the process and let's just stay in the present, not stay, I gotta do this, I gotta be this way, I gotta be that way. Just stay in the present live your life in the present and see what happens and see where the wind takes you, I guess. It's just kind of the way we started looking at things. And shoot, 5 years later, World Series later, like, unbelievable.
I mean, the mentality, right? It's going to sound maybe a little counterintuitive to people listening to this, but one of the strongest mentalities that I've learned from high level athletes, whether it's you, whether it's George St. Pierre, whoever it is, talking about like, let's just go find out. Like, I'm going to do the preparation. I'm going to do the work. I'm going to stay in shape. I'm going to be prepared, but let's go find out. Not like I know I'm going to dominate. It's too hard. The competition is too good, right? But I'm going to dominate what I can control in my process. And then I'm going to go compete and find out. And I think that's a very process-based, not a lot of result-focused mindset that's going to help deliver results. So, like, talk about the controllables, Kurt. How important is it for you during your career as a baseball player to just control what you can control and let go of the stuff you can't?
You know, that's the funny thing. All these things that you're saying to me now is the stuff that I learned from Kenny, right? I learned from college, and I still take those days. Like, what can you control? You can't control where you hit the baseball. I mean, in reality, right, you're up there facing 100 miles an hour. You're not going to say, I'm going to hit this ball to first base. Sometimes you can do it, and you can say, I'm going to do it, and you do it, right, which is very rare. But you can't control the outcome of putting a good swing on a ball and hitting it somewhere, right? You hit it at – you line out at people. You can't control when a pitcher yanks a fastball that's supposed to be in and goes by you. You can't control a ball that you go – you do everything perfect in this game, and you still fail. That's how messed up this game is, right? You can't control all that things. You can't control the results. You do, like, I remember in this spring training, I know I'm going back to this spring training again, but I learned a lot of things talking to Wash is you can't control the outcomes of the game. You can do things right. Like, let's say you do things right 7 out of the 10 times that you go up to bat, right? You perfect swing, you swing at the perfect pitch, you work the perfect count, but you're only successful 2 times. Are you considered a failure, or are you considered, I did everything right and it just didn't work out, right? How can you create your mentality to think that way, where you're 2 for 10 and you line out 5 times where you could easily have been 7 for 10? But that's not how this game works. You can't control that. So instead of looking at it as I'm failing those 5 times where you do everything right, you're not failing. You're doing everything right. You just have to stay with the process and keep going. And then the next 10 at bats, you might hit 4 dinkers and hit 3 bullets, and then you're 7 for 10. And you're like, oh man, I'm locked in. But you're like, wait, you know, I hit 4 dinkers. But then and you can't worry about the results, right? All you can worry about, like you said, is what you can control. And you can control yourself. You can control your mind. And that's, to me, the most important thing is not trying to control the outcomes of the game, but control how you react to them, right? How are you going to react to lining out to the third baseman with the tying run at third base? Like, how are you going to react to doing everything right to block a pitch and it kicks off a little bit and the guy kind of advances to second base? How are you going to react? Are you going to get down on yourself and dwell on the past? Or are you going to move on to the next pitch and say, so what? Throw that pitch again. I'm going to block it this time.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. How can you control that? Like, can you control your mind that way? And I think that's what separates you, where as a catcher, I can relate to this, because you call a curveball, Max Scherzer's throwing or Steven Strasburg curveball, right? Nasty. He throws it in the dirt. It's spinning so hard. It kicks off of you a little bit. You go and you don't get the guy out at third base. But that runner at home is trying to score that guy. Are you afraid to call that nasty pitch again? And as a catcher, you can't have that fear, because that fear of failure is not going to help anybody. Where in my mind, I say, I want to call this pitch again, because that's the right pitch, and I'm going to call it, and I'm going to block it. And I'm calling that curve, and I'm pointing to the dirt, like, throw it again. Don't hang it and give up a hit because you're afraid that I'm not going to block it. Curveball, throw it in the dirt. I'm going to block it. And that's the mentality that you need to have to play at that elite level, because if you're afraid of failure, you'll never succeed, because you're playing against the best. What's going to separate you from playing against the best players? Because they're all talented as you are. The guys here are mentally strong, where the guys here, they're afraid of failure. They're afraid of being embarrassed. They feel like failure is an embarrassment, where it's not. You're playing at the best players in the world. How can you separate that? How can you be stronger mentally? And that to me is everything about baseball.
I love it. You know, there's so much of what you're talking about too, I think relates back to just the position you played too, of being a catcher. You know, and we talk a lot about the mentality of like the pre-pitch routine for pitchers, or the pre-pitch routine. And we showed of you getting in the box and the plate 03 to 04. Talk about the mentality that, like you just kind of alluded to, behind the plate as a catcher, where you call the curveball, you block it, the guy takes a free 90 feet, and then you have the confidence to call it again. In your opinion, Zook, what is the mental game of catching? And like, what can guys do, catchers in the big leagues or so, that are listening to this, that want to learn from your experience? Like, how do they need to work on the mental game for them? What is that behind the plate specifically?
I guess for behind the plate, I can go back to an example, right? We're in game one of the World Series in 2019 against the Astros. My first World Series, obviously, I'm catching Max Scherzer, sold out crowd in Houston. It's going bananas out there. And I remember specifically before that game, Max had, we were going over in a scouting report. He goes, I know I can't hang any sliders. I can't throw any lazy sliders over the plate because they're going to kill it. So I have to finish every pitch. So in my mind, I'm preparing myself. Okay, he's thinking he can't throw that. 85% chance is probably going to be in the dirt. So I have to be ready for every pitch to be in the dirt. And am I going to be ready as in, tense up, get excited with my emotions to ready to block the ball, or I'm going to try to stay calm. I've done this before. It's just another pitch. Just do it. And I feel like I remember taking myself to that game. And I still think about it when I watch the highlights, is whenever I called a slider and a runner on third base, I remember taking a deep breath. When Max would come to a set, I would take a deep breath and try to relax, almost like picking up a focal point, right? Where I wasn't staring at my glove or anything. I was staring at Max. I would take a deep breath, like how I would get into the box, deep breath, and then the pitch would come and I would react. Whereas if I feel like if I was so tense and in the moment going crazy, I would probably be a lot slower. But it was almost like I took my hitting to my catching, where I would take a deep breath, and I think I might have blocked 10 balls in the first two innings. I don't really know how I did it. I just did it. And it was probably just me telling myself mentally, take a deep breath, stay in the moment, enjoy this moment. You're on this stage for a reason. You're here for a reason. You're here to dominate. Just do your job. And I did it. And it was, I still remember to this day when guys ask me, oh man, you block this and blocking this. It's like, you have to relax. How can you do that when you're in the box? Deep breath. All the shoulders relax, your reactions get quicker. Just like, you know, probably GSP talks about fighting. When he's tensed up, he's slow, right? He's slow, yeah. His reactions aren't fast. When he relaxes, settles in, boom, he's quick. It's just like catching. When you take a breath, you relax right before you get a routine, whatever it was like, I give my sign, I give my target, I jump up, and when I see him come ready to pitch, I take a deep breath, relax, and then I react.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the type of mentality for a catcher, because everybody's looking at you.
Yeah.
You're every pitch of the game. Everybody's looking at you. How can you relax yourself? What can you do? For me, it was take a deep breath right before the pitch comes and I go. And I think having that routine, when you got 40,000 people watching you, everybody's looking at you, you need something to get yourself locked in, ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. It's just the idea of the deep breath as a catcher, right? You have your process, sign, target, breath, and then react. I think we miss that as coaches, talking about, you know, the defensive routine and how important that is, especially for a catcher. I mean, I just look over my career. How much have I talked with pitchers about the pre-pitch routine? A ton. How much have I talked with catchers about a pre-pitch routine who are also involved in that, and they're reacting to what's happening, so it's much harder for you? Not at all. So like that's really interesting that you bring that up in terms of the importance of the catching routine. So I appreciate that. Kurt, last question for you here, as I know we're getting close on time. 2003, you go to the College World Series, beat LSU, beat Stanford, lose to Stanford twice. 2004, you're back at Cal State Fullerton. You got Jason Windsor, you got Ricky Romero, you got Justin Turner, you got you got PJ Pillitteri, right? You got a team, I think Brett Pill was on that team. Neil Walton, I think, might have been on that team. And you guys are 15-16. You just go down to the University of Texas and you get swept. You come back to Cal State Fullerton. You're 15-16. And you guys roll the rest of the way and win the national championship. So what would you talk to right now? You got college baseball players listening to this as the season's underway, and they want to know, what's it take to win a national championship from a teammate and a culture standpoint? What would you talk about that 2014?
Well, I feel like we talked about it a little bit earlier, right? Learning from your failures. What happened early in the year, right? I feel like we were still coming together as a team. Every year is different. We're still coming together as a team. Fifth, I remember in Austin, we get smoked. Like Texas just boat raced us. I remember Coach Horton talked about this a little bit, saying to one of the Texas coaches, and we all overheard it. We were talking about it like, oh, yeah, we'll see you on TV watching you guys on the World Series in June. And we all took that to heart. Like, and I remember Coach Horton bringing this up to us, and he still talks about it to this day. I saw him last year at one of my son's games, he came out to watch. And we talk about that time. And what changed, right? It was having Ken Revisa there was a big part of it, right? It was get the monkey off your back, stay with the process. I mean, we're on pace to be the worst team ever in Fullerton history at 15 and 16. And I remember we were throwing parties after a double, like all the little stuff that not winning teams do, right? Yep. That's what we were doing. And so how will we change that? We said, hey, win the next pitch. Hey, so what? So what? Win the next pitch. And the last one, I don't know if you remember, Kano, in the Omaha, we had a tape. PJ wrote, he put a piece of athletic tape in the dugout every time. And I don't know if you remember what it says, but I remember to this day.
I remember.
You know what it says?
Yeah, think how good it's going to feel.
Think how good it's going to feel, right? Being positive and thinking positively was going to help. And I think we went, 20-1 or something in the Big West Conference.
Yeah.
Rolled into the regionals. But do you remember what happened in the regionals?
No.
We get walked off against Pepperdine, the second game of the regionals. Ryan Schreppels on the mound gave up a 3-run bomb to get walked off. We had to come back and play Arizona State with Dustin Pedroia, Travis Buck, Jeff Larish in the nightcap to win that game to advance to the next day. And I remember this. We win that game 5-0. Mike Martinez pitched the game shutout, 5-0. We come to the park the next day against Pepperdine and have to beat them twice. I remember walking to that field, Pepperdine's in that dugout, and I remember the looks on their faces that they had. They were like, oh, shit, we're about to get smoked today. And I remember we went, I think we ended up beating them by 10 runs plus in both games. But it was like, it was never easy. It was never easy. And so it's we could have just caved after getting walked off that second game against Pepperdine before and then get smoked by Arizona State in nightcap after getting devastated loss. But we said, so what? Win the next pitch. Let's move on. We have a game to go. We have the game to win. Win 5-0. Get to tomorrow. So let's win the next pitch. And we just took that mentality. We swept Tulane two games in the Super Regionals. Then took that mentality as being the team with the worst record in College World Series. Beat South Carolina in the game one, Windsor, Miami in game two, and then lost to South Carolina and then had to win again the must-win series with Scott Sarver starting the mound for us.
Yeah.
Like one of the guys that nobody talks about. But it was everybody has to do their part to succeed, right? Mm. You're a team. You're not an individual. You're not a Kurt Suzuki. You're not a Justin Turner. Everybody has a job to do. And if everybody just does their part and worries about themselves and like with the process of I'm not trying to be PJ at first base. PJ's not trying to be Justin Turner at second base. Everybody just does what they do and pull for each other and just does their job. Good things will happen. I feel like when guys start getting on each other, right? Like, oh, come on, feel that ground ball. Oh, come on, throw strikes. And then you get this disconnect where nobody's pulling on the same rope together. Everybody's kind of separate. And I feel like in college baseball, you're with each other from the fall workouts to non-mandies. To January, we had 2-a-days in January, and then we go into the season. We're with each other for 8 months to get to that pinnacle of the sport and to be able to win. It was like feeling like you wouldn't believe all the pain and suffering. Although you're going to be the worst team in college in Fullerton history to winning the World Series, College World Series. It took a lot of staying in the process. Next pitch, get the monkey off your back. Think how good it's going to feel. Red light, focal point, all that stuff that we learned from Revisa. Mm. All that stuff is just gold.
Mm. It's awesome. Kurt Suzuki, man. Thank you for joining us here on the Mental Performance Mastery Podcast. Awesome. I mean, that's like a little clinic there in the mental game of baseball and a trip down memory lane for BKane. So I appreciate you hopping on here and breaking that down, brother. Thanks for being with us. Aloha.
Kana, thank you, brother.
I hope you got as much out of that great podcast with Kurt Suzuki as I did. What an awesome experience and a great articulation of his mental game and time in baseball. If you're looking for more, please be sure to follow our show so you're aware of every time we come out with a new Mental Performance Mastery podcast. Also, click in the show notes below to follow our Mental Performance Daily podcast, 2 to 3 minutes a day of mental performance for you. Also, we have a free 3-day coaches course, a 3-day athletes course, and a baseball masterclass below, where you can learn more about mastering mental performance. Thanks for being here. Please give a follow to the show, leave a rating and review, and dominate your day.